Well, thank you all. I'm very pleased to be here. I feel privileged to be in what must be the absolute graveyard slot, second after lunch, just as it all sinks. So the only thing I can offer you is we've got pictures, but no numbers. The research is rather qualitative in approach. As you see, it's joint with Mark Livingston, who's here today, for whom the credit for much of the detailed work that I'm talking about must go. And also Ivan Turuk, who's currently in South Africa, but many of you all know is involved in this research too. What we're doing, I think, is a little different to some of the other projects in this initiative. What we're particularly interested is in the body of students and the impact that makes on local areas. We're interested in them as workers and as residents. And really, our starting point was very much what somebody earlier said today, that universities don't move. So we've had this enormous change in the higher education system, packing into existing campuses, existing towns. And we're interested to know what difference has that made to local, particularly urban areas. The context which people have spoken about already is obviously there's been a very great increase in the number of students, not matched by institutional provision of accommodation by and large. And I think what's interesting about students is that they're a very different sort of migrant group. In many cities, they come, they stay for 3 years, and they go. So they're a constantly self-refreshing, perpetuating group of young, middle-class, often skilled young people who stay for a bit and then go. But they're a constant population looked at in the aggregate who change faces. And then obviously the other main context that we're interested in is that the whole financial system has changed, so that increasingly students have to finance themselves with a mix of parental support, loans, and increasingly work. And obviously everybody involved in the university sector is very aware that students are working a lot. And one of the issues that's picked up in the literature, of course, is the extent to which this might be increasing the socio-polarisation of the opportunities in higher education for those who have to work while they're at university and those who don't. What we've done is to identify five case studies, which was particularly to try and have one in each of the devolved regions of the UK. So we've got Glasgow, Belfast and Cardiff, and then two in England. We've chosen Sunderland and Nottingham. One of our primary focuses was to choose cities that needed some regeneration input. So one of our core questions is, you know, can this body of students be harnessed for additional economic activity that increases economic capacity in these places that need some regeneration? You'll also be aware that what we're trying to capture here is difference in economic trajectory and different sorts of student populations. So as Bob was saying earlier, obviously Northern Ireland and Glasgow are similar in having quite a lot of home students, whereas Nottingham and Cardiff capture a much more mobile group of elite students that come from across the UK. As I say, our research is largely qualitative. In each of these cities, we're trying to speak to a range of key actors, and Mark will have spoken to at least some of you in the audience here today as sort of key actors and key informants about the situation in Belfast. We're also doing an employer survey, and this I think is a new part of the work that we're doing. There's evidence largely from what students report and also a little bit in Labour Force survey and other data about the sorts of jobs that students are doing. So we've constructed samples of these employers in each of our case study areas and are trying to speak to retail, hospitality, call centres, these sorts of jobs where students are disproportionately are working. It's been a real struggle to get this done. This has been another enormous effort on Mark's part. We've got a very tight questionnaire that's very quick to administer, but people are still very reluctant to answer the questions. But we're trying to find out something about the scale of student employment, the sorts of jobs they do, what advantages they bring compared to other workers. And our underlying questions really are about, do students have the potential to displace job opportunities from other young people in the market? Or alternatively, do they have the capacity to generate additional economic capacity or additional gains? Now, I should say, we're very much in the middle of this. So I'm not going to give numbers, but rather a more qualitative flavour about what we're finding so far. Perhaps as you'd expect, what the employers seem to be overwhelmingly saying to us is that the advantage students bring is flexibility. And this perhaps comes as no surprise, but students will cover late shifts, weekend shifts. They'll come in at short notice. And they'll cover shifts in a sense that are less attractive for other sorts of workers. And again, thinking about the sorts of sectors that we were talking about, the sort of call centres, the big out-of-town retailers, big supermarkets, hospitality, these are classically industries that have quite high demand out of hours. So students are apparently plugging a very important gap in the workforce here. We find, and again, this is a slightly qualitative feel perhaps to what's going on. Students seem to be getting offered contracts around 12 to 16, up to 20 hours. Many universities recommend that students work around 15 as a maximum, beyond which it's considered to impact adversely on studies. But even that's quite a lot of hours. You know, for many people, you'd say there's no such thing as a full-time student anymore. You know, 16 hours is half of a full-time worker. When we're asking people about what they do, they're doing very routine jobs. They're working on the shop floor, in the stockroom, working on bars, clearing tables. So I think what's interesting in those very routine occupations is that employers still talk about the sort of soft skills that can bring added value even to these quite routine jobs. So again, these are some quotes from some of the employers we've been speaking to. These are all from Belfast, because we like to make it local, but you know, the idea that they're more competent, more confident, they're motivated, youthful exuberance, keen and enthusiastic. So in these sorts of comments, we're getting some suggestion, perhaps, that students can bring things to the jobs that are harder to get out of youth, perhaps from more disadvantaged backgrounds. There's also a suggestion in the literature that one of the things that students can bring is what's called aesthetic labour, the idea that people look right, are stylish, you know, can bring some of these sorts of additional advantages that project an image of the business that employers want, that again they can do more successfully than other local youngsters. So again, we get employers are very reluctant to say we only want students. You know, they tend to say, of course we'll employ anybody who can do the job, who's willing to work the hours or whatever. But at the same time, we're getting some comments when we ask in more detail about the advantages students can bring, that suggests that some of these advantages do underpin the employment decisions, that students have the right look, know the right music, can bring a bit of added value to the business. I think one of the things that we're finding, which is a bit contradictory perhaps to the things I've been saying before, or a bit less reflected in the literature, is that employers can point to a lot of disadvantages in employing students. Unreliability is often mentioned. That's perhaps tied a bit to the lack of motivation, but the idea that, you know, students do a lot of partying, there will be mornings when they can't be bothered to get up. They may sort of give up when exam pressure gets heavy, when they get fed up with a job or whatever. So the idea that students are really only doing it because they're trying to save up a bit of money, they have very short-term time horizons, may make them relatively unattractive employees. As I say, a lot of employers are saying to us, you know, I can't say anything in general about this. It very much depends on the individual. That's, you know, students are different and other people are different. I think one of the another interesting thing that we're beginning to find that we're going to have to explore a bit more is this idea that at least some big employers seem to be making quite systematic efforts to capture and look after students. Some of them allow students to work in their university town during term, but then give them a job when they go home for Christmas or the summer. So there's some sort of feeling that some of the bigger employers are beginning to capture this workforce as quite an important part of their business. Whereas the small casual bars and so on expect a very quick turnover and don't expect any employee loyalty. And within this, it suggests that different students might end up in different sorts of jobs. And again, this is something that we need to look at a bit more. But it might be that the students who really need to work very consistently and steadily will end up with these bigger employers where the prospects are longer term, whereas people who are just saving up for a holiday will be in the very quick turnover sort of jobs. So again, we're seeing some differentiation, I think, in the labour market that hasn't been picked up before. When we're thinking about impacts, and again, this is very much emerging, we don't get any sense, you know, when you speak to economic development agencies or whatever, that, or indeed the employers themselves, that business decisions are absolutely made with the availability of a student workforce in mind. You know, that might be taken for granted, but it's not a driving force. And we certainly don't get the impression that employers are investing much in students. And I think it's because they're seen as this very casual workforce. And in some cases, we get the impression this is probably having a negative impact on the extent to which graduates might choose to go into these businesses. So having been at the bottom end of the hospitality industry, they're less inclined to think of that as a career in the future. But they're certainly a very important part of the workforce. You know, in some places, there's you know, certainly tens and hundreds of employers that are students. And we're getting very variable answers about who'd replace them. And I think in some places, employers think that students would be quite hard to replace if they didn't work. I wanted to say something a little bit about Belfast and some of our other case studies, just because I think this gives a flavour of the sort of work that we're hoping to be able to do that explains some local difference. Belfast seems to be, and I'm conscious I'm speaking to an audience who'll know much more about many of these things than me, but in residential terms, the concentration seems particularly high in Belfast, and some of the conflicts between residents and students have been particularly acute. Many of exactly the same problems are found. So wherever we're speaking to residents about their student neighbourhoods, we get the same complaints about rubbish, about too many cars clogging up the streets, about noise. It's particularly the clash of lifestyles, that students come back from parties at 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock or whenever and slam taxi doors and sing in the streets. And this is a real conflict, particularly with family lifestyles, where people are trying to get up for work and school in the morning. Just to give you some pictures of Cardiff, you know, we have very similar stories from Cardiff, where again, student areas are similar, terraced houses get over-occupied with students and the negative effects seem very strong. One of the interesting differences between Cardiff and Belfast seems to be that in Belfast, in many areas, landlords were helped to improve properties, whereas in Cardiff, it's very much associated with a degradation of the properties in the areas that students are living in. When we look at Glasgow, students are tending to occupy not family areas, but areas that are more predominantly young professionals. And we suspect that the design of the stock and the housing stock, particularly for high-density living, seems to be making some of these tensions between residents and their neighbours less acute. So what we're hoping to do in the case study is really to get to grips with some of these differences. And again, I don't want to go beyond my competence in this, but in Belfast, it seems part of the acute conflict is also caused by the lack of alternatives for some of the working class families that are in the areas that students are occupying. Whereas in Glasgow and Cardiff, there's a sort of freer housing market that allows people to move on. And I don't know if you can see this, but it's just really to give you an illustration of the extraordinarily high concentrations of HMOs, housing and multiple occupancy, that's in Belfast. So all the little squares are houses, and everyone with a blue one has got permission to be an HMO. So in the areas sort of outlined in red, these are some of the core student areas in Belfast. And again, I think that very, very high concentration, and obviously we can compare that with other places, would seem almost bound to make conflicts acute in a housing stock that's not terribly well built, that wasn't built for such high density occupancy, and still has some families that are finding it hard to find alternative accommodation. But obviously, I'd be interested in your comments on that. The other way in which Belfast seems to be different to some of the other case studies is that although it has had an increase in student numbers, and we saw that earlier, it hasn't been as high as in some of the other cities we're looking at because of the controlled numbers. And the other very different thing is that students are often seen as a Monday to Thursday sort of phenomenon, with those not based at home going back. So, you know, again, this is different to students in Glasgow who, you know, either stay in Glasgow or stay at home. And in Glasgow would tend to socialise and work in the city centre, whereas we suspect for some of these students in Belfast, they must keep a job in their home area and go back to that at the weekend. So we can see lots of different things going on. And what was interesting in speaking to the employers in Belfast was that many of them specifically said students have to work a weekend shift, which I think would be taken for granted in most of the other case study areas, but sort of suggests that employers, while recognising that some students want to go home, are still able to find enough students that want to stay around in Belfast to find enough workers who can work these slightly difficult shifts to cover. So it may be that in Belfast too, the student population is enjoying something of the peace dividends. So, you know, when you talk about the sort of negative effects of high concentrations of students in terms of the clash of lifestyle, the advantage that they bring in many urban areas is this sort of cosmopolitan cafe culture, you know, nice nighttime economy sort of activities. So there's a suggestion perhaps in Belfast that there's, you know, more of that developing. You know, obviously the peace dividend generally is delivering that, but also associated with some of the areas where students predominantly live. So just to finish, as I say, with a very rapid scoot over some of the things we're thinking about. It does seem clear that students play an important part in many workforces. Employers value them, value the skills they bring, and many of them say they'd be hard to replace. And in most places it's said that a student who wants to work can find work, that there's said to be not much problem in finding work. You know, despite thinking back to the case studies, we've got case studies where the overall economy, particularly for young people, is relatively weak, perhaps. But again, just to pick up on the points that the previous presentation was finishing on, it seems likely that students are also going to suffer in the credit crisis, that the industries they're in are going to be shedding labour, they're going to be doing less business. And again, like everybody, we're all watching in amazement as the economy completely reverses its fortunes. But it's got potentially serious implications, I think, for a higher education policy that's absolutely founded on the ability of students to pull together a collection of resources from parents, from loans, and particularly from work. And if that plank goes, I think that will threaten the ability of many students to complete courses, particularly. They may start with high hopes, but may not be able to sustain themselves in university. And obviously, what we hope our work will be able to show is how these different forces play out differently in different local economies and different local circumstances. So, thank you for that.